77. Completion. Bill, April, 2221, Delta Pavonis. It took a little over 4 years for the others to strip Delta Pavonis. It was an impressive speed until you realized that exponential behavior was involved. They brought a huge complement of auto factories, which they used to produce equipment which mined resources for the production of more equipment. At some point, they stopped building equipment and started loading the cargo vessels. Finally, they harvested most of the equipment they'd built. The fleet that left the system consisted of only cargo vessels and death asteroids. Once they were gone, we moved in to examine the damage. The asteroid belt and any small moons in the system had been stripped, of course. What really hurt was the state of Delta Pavonis IV. The others hadn't been concerned with ecological damage, obviously. They'd left the planet a dirty ball of mud. All the green had long since faded to a dull brown. The blue of the oceans was replaced by a mottled gray, and the ice caps had either melted or been coated with dust and soot. Every major city had been demolished. The lack of corpses was, in a way, a blessing, but it left a ghostly, empty tableau that would have been completely appropriate to any of 100 post-apocalyptic movies. I took it as long as I could. Then I turned off the video feeds, put my face in my hands, and wept. Jacques agreed that rehabilitation of DP-4 would take a long time, but he quite correctly pointed out that flying the paths to another system far enough away from the others to be safe would possibly take just as long. We had a reasonable candidate. A wandering Bob had found a suitable colonization target at HIP-84051. At more than 40 light-years from Sol, it didn't even rate a name, just a minor designation in the constellation Ara. I popped over to visit Will. Hey, guy, how are you holding up? Riker still wore a haunted look. Homer's suicide had affected him more than anyone would have thought possible. With the perfect memory that being a replicant brought with it, things didn't fade with time. The vengeance that he had extracted had helped some, but there would always be a hole in the Bobiverse. He gave me a small smile. Holding steady, Bill. You hear about HIP-84051-2? At my nod, he continued. It was on the discussion agenda, and when I brought up the circumstances, the UN voted to make it available to the PAV refugees. Honestly, I think it's a little too far from Seoul to be really attractive anyway. I sat down and materialized a coffee and took a moment to look around. Will had long since given up the Star Trek motif, and he was going by his first name. I guess number one's first name, anyway, most of the time now. That was the name that our relatives knew him by, anyway. The VR resembled a housing unit on Vulcan, although I recognized some decor and paraphernalia from original Bob's apartment. I smiled to see the limited edition Spock plaque signed by Leonard Nimoy hanging on the wall. Life just keeps getting more complicated, doesn't it? I raised the coffee in salute. Suppose so. Will stretched, then materialized a coffee of his own. I'm beginning to think Bob One has the right idea. He's been talking about going out again once Archimedes is gone. Just point the ship and accelerate for a while. I sighed and nodded. We were, what, 8 to 10 generations deep in Bob's now? Bob One had achieved a kind of legendary status. He rarely showed up at Moots anymore, and when he did, it was like a Shatner sighting. I felt a deep sympathy for him. He was the first of us to get emotionally involved with ephemerals, and until Jacques and the Pavs, his had had the worst outcome. I understand you're going to wake some Pav and put the question to them, Will said. Yeah. Jacques has an unreasonable attachment to the idea of recolonizing DP-4, in my opinion, but he's rational enough to see it. Will returned one of his rare full-on smiles. Well, Bob, right? We laughed together, and I continued. So we'll give them the choice. Attempt to recolonize DP-4 or head for a new world with an already established ecosystem. And a compatible one, as seems to be the norm, I chuckled. I sure wish I could go back and talk to Dr. Carlyle. I bet he'd be tickled that his theories have been so emphatically vindicated. Will nodded but didn't comment. I sat back, and we sipped our coffees in silence, simply enjoying the company and the momentary pause in existence. The Pav huddled in a corner, whimpering. I'd expected a certain level of fear, but the Pav's reaction bordered on xenophobia. But I doubted the, recruitment had involved a lot of discussion and consent. Kidnapping was a pretty accurate description. The specimen in front of us was probably still traumatized. At that moment, the door to the chamber opened and three more Pav staggered in. They were still suffering from post-stasis confusion, but they reacted in instinctive Pav pack fashion by huddling in a pile with our first candidate. The presence of company seemed to calm her significantly. Over the next few hours, we brought in several more Pav until we had eight of them in the room. The number was arbitrary, but Jacques' investigation of the species had indicated a general maximum of eight adults to a family group. We hoped that it was a significant number for them. When they appeared outwardly calm and had started to compare notes with each other, I decided it was time for official first contact. Hello. All eight Pav went into alert posture. The resemblance to meerkats was even more pronounced than usual, and in better circumstances I would have chuckled at the tableau.
Who are you? Where are we?
This was not going to be easy. My name is Bill. I'm part of Bobnet. The translation routine rendered proper names phonetically, but the sounds wouldn't mean anything to them. Who we are is a very long story. Where you are and why is a shorter and very unpleasant story. I described the others to them and explained their habit of raiding systems and killing off planets. A monitor on one wall displayed images of others, the aftermath of Zeta Tucanae, and finally the destruction of Delta Pavonis IV. As the images of dead cities, oceans, and forests flashed on the screen, the Pav began to keen. Sitting through that was one of the hardest things I'd ever done, but I had a moral obligation to stick with it. It took a few hours, but we finally got through the whole story. The group seemed perplexed.
You want us to decide? To return to ASEAN or settle a different world?
That is correct. The Pav huddled and argued in low voices for several minutes. Hasjar, who seemed to have taken on the role of spokesperson, said,
Why?
Because we don't know you well enough to know what would work best for you.
Why not?
Because we haven't been studying you for long enough.
Why not?
Oh, holy... That's not important. We will make the decision if you don't want to, but we wanted to give you the option first.
And there are 20,000 of us? Why not more?
That's how many will fit into the two ships that we were able to build.
Why?
What are you, a four-year-old? I would have to nip this in the bud before I blew a transistor or something. Again, not important now. Are you willing and able to make that decision? If not, let us know, and we'll take care of it.
We will discuss this. Is there food?
You mean at the new planet? Oh, you mean now. Sorry, I'll get some. Fortunately, Jacques had thought of stocking up on standard Pav food and drink. I decanted a small supply and delivered it. The Pav laid in as if they hadn't eaten in a week. I stared in shock at the free-for-all. So far, no one seemed to have lost a limb, but that could just be luck. Jacques chuckled at the expression on my face. No, that's pretty much normal feeding behavior. Miss Manners would never catch on with these people. I shook my head. Count them after they're done, okay? Make sure there are still eight. At Hasjar's request, we provided images of the proposed colony planet. It possessed a marginally heavier gravity with correspondingly thicker atmosphere, but was similar enough to ASEAN that adaptation wouldn't be an issue. The flora and fauna would be completely unfamiliar to them, of course, but it didn't include anything too large to deal with. We promised the Pav any help they needed, regardless of their decision. They seemed heartened by that, and I privately sighed in exasperation. Again, we were going to be responsible for another client race. If Jacques wanted to be involved, fine, but I resolved to keep my distance.
We will choose the new world,
Hasyar stood tall and spoke with confidence. I knew that the decision hadn't been easy or unanimous, but I was impressed at their willingness to even make a decision. She looked down, then continued in a softer voice.
We do not like the idea of all resources being supplied by you. No offense, but we do not know you.
I grinned at Jacques, who smiled back and shrugged. That's fine, Hasyar. We'll get started right away. It will be necessary to put you back to sleep, but we'll be gentler this time. Hasyar nodded. By coincidence, a nod meant the same thing to the Pav as it did to us.
When we awake, we will be there?
That's correct. And we will have set up an encampment for you to live in until you can build something for yourselves. Hasyar cocked her head slightly.
I am curious. Why do you do this? Who is paying you, or do you expect us to pay you?
I chuckled, which the translation routine converted to the Pav expression of humor. And a good thing, who knew how a human chuckle would come across. We don't use money, Hasyar. We have no need for it. This statement produced a look of shock. Apparently capitalism was alive and well in Pav culture. After staring at the monitor for a few more seconds, Hasyar turned away, while muttering something that sounded like Dojagrie. The routine translated it as critters with broken brains. The Pav seemed reluctant to return to the stasis chambers and generally acted like a bunch of kids trying to delay bedtime. Eventually, though, we managed to cajole them all through the door and into the prep room. Within an hour, they were all squared away. Well, Bill, I guess this is it. Not quite yet, Jacques. A couple of the guys did some scavenging. We've managed to retrieve enough resources to put together a couple of version 3s for you and the other Bobs who are bodiless right now. It'll take a few months, but at least then you'll be able to ride escort instead of supercargo. Jacques nodded. Thanks, Bill. Let's do that. Finally, departure day. The two refugee ships, officially named Refuge 1 and 2, brought their surge drives up to full power and turned their bows to aim for HIP 84051. I watched their departure from the forward camera of one of the Bobs that was still in system. With the departure of the refugee ships, there was no longer any reason to maintain a presence in this system. It represented our greatest failure, and several Bobs had complained that it felt as though it was full of ghosts. Everyone who didn't have a reason to stay had long since left, and now most of the rest of us would be departing. A couple of eighth-generation Bobs had volunteered to stay behind and do a post-invasion survey. I looked at Andrew across the table, waiting for him to speak. Finally, he took a deep breath and leaned forward to put his elbows on the table. Everyone is gathering at Gamma Pavonis. Threats or no, the others still have a Dyson sphere to build. They won't halt everything while they march off to Sol. We want to be ready next time. I stared into space, nodding. Meanwhile, Riker has started building dreadnoughts at Sol, and I'm building a fleet in Epsilon Eridani. Ditto, Oliver, and Alpha Centauri. We have the cloaking nailed now, so we'll be able to give them a harder time of it. The root problem, though, is still to produce enough ordnance to make a dent in the others' armada. The size problem is still overwhelming. This is all just a delaying action. Andrew shook his head morosely. As long as the others are always making the first move, we can never defeat them. All they have to do is huddle for a decade or two, rebuild, and we're back to square one. We have to take the fight to them. This is true, and you know damned well it's been the subject of many a moot. I glared at Andrew. I have an idea that I'm working on that might form a final solution, but I'm not sure yet if it's even feasible. And even if it turns out to be workable, it's a long game. Meanwhile, we're also trying to gear up to an invasion fleet. Maybe we can drop in on the others and pay our respects. Andrew's only answer was a predatory smile. End Book 2.
This has been an Audible Studios production of For We Are Many, Bobbyverse Book 2, written by Dennis E. Taylor. Performed by Ray Porter. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2017, Dennis E. Taylor. Production copyright 2017 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.